the Mears family is a fairly famous name throughout Australian cycling history, especially over the last decade or so. Was there something in the country water for you and your sister, or was it just a good old country air, you think, that brought out the talents of you both?
Probably a bit of country boredom played a role, but I don't know, we're just a very sporting family. Mum was a 100-metre track sprint runner, and Dad, coming from New Zealand, has a rugby background as well as rowing, so we were never encouraged to really just sit around, watch TV or play video games. It was always to get out and do something and try something new. So, and also living in the country, bikes were just the easy way to get around as a kid. So, well, I mean, we had BMX bikes, bush bashing bikes, mountain bikes, you name it. So it just kind of seemed like the natural progression, really.
Do you remember the moment when you went from bashing around on a BMX to this could get a little bit more serious, to actually getting onto a velodrome and starting to ride competitively?
Yeah, we were watching Cathy Watt on the TV from the 94 Commonwealth Games. And that kind of sparked our interest in track cycling. We hadn't actually come across it in our lives prior to that, and that was when I was 11. And me and Kerry were both watching, and we asked Dad if we could try track cycling. And in our town, you know, the population of Middlemount was only 2,000. There was absolutely no facilities at all for the sport of cycling, let alone track cycling. So Dad looked up in the yellow pages for the closest cycling club, which happened to be Mackay, 300k away. And drove us in one weekend, fell in love with it. Now 16 years later, here we are.
Has Dad forgiven you for yet?
Yes, he most definitely has. I mean, Mum and Dad are very proud of how hard we've worked and what both Kerry and I have achieved. And I guess we kind of had a real good example of what it was to be committed to something, because Mum and Dad, every Friday afternoon after school at 3:05, would rotate shifts to pick us up. They'd drive us 300k. We'd race Friday night, Sunday morning, then drive home 300k in time for school on Monday morning. So, I mean, we made a lot of sacrifices as kids, but Mum and Dad made a lot as parents as well. So we're very fortunate to have both Mum and Dad so supportive of a dream, I guess, at the age of 11, which was really cool.
Now, for you, pretty much the sacrifices don't end. People might be able to hear at the moment that you're a little bit out of breath, not a great deal though, but you're actually, you've still got to train. There is literally no stopping for you, is there?
No, it's especially considering that departure date is very, very close now. Things do get very hectic. Lots of extracurricular things you've got to fit in around the training schedule. And, you know, like you said, I'm a little bit out of breath now. I'm just sitting here on the rollers because we've got to do 45 minutes just to roll the legs out before I get on the plane tomorrow for America.
That's got to be hard coming from pretty much what is a long-haul flight. Does that get any easier as the time goes past?
It does a little bit. I mean, I guess you actually know what to expect, what level of fatigue, what level of jet lag that comes with just living so far away from areas where our sport is so dominant. It's great in America and great in Europe, but for us to get any kind of real competitive international competition, we've really got to fly 10 to 15 hours or more at times just to find it. So, I mean, while we're not actually going for competition at the moment, we're actually heading over for preparation training camp for the Commonwealth Games. And this will be the first time they're actually trialling altitude for myself. So I'm actually really interested to see how it's going to fall together or piece together, I guess you could say, over the next couple of months leading into Delhi.
For you, the benefits of the altitude training is obviously to get your body to process the oxygen is a bit better. Is that what they're after?
Yeah, the whole process, or the thought process behind taking a bunch of sprinters to altitude, which is in itself very unique. A lot of the time they'll take endurance athletes over the sprinters, but the whole idea behind it is to teach your body to work as hard in an intense environment that is oxygen deprived. And then with a whole lot of monitoring from the coach and the support staff that we have and the sports science staff going over, gradually come back into an oxygen-rich environment, and the adaption of the body and the muscles and the lungs is supposed to be quite significant. You're trying to get your body to work on a very limited supply of oxygen, and once it adapts, I mean, we're going to be there for a four-week period, once it adapts to the very low oxygen environment, we're going to all of a sudden be in a very rich oxygen environment in Switzerland and then leading into Delhi. And well, actually, so I've been told, going to feel like absolute crap for about 3 weeks, which is not the best thing mentally to go into a major competition knowing that that's going to be the case. But, you know, the coach has timed it with his experience in the past, both with the Australian Sydney 2000 Olympic team and the Japanese 2004 Athens Olympic team. It takes 18 days for the body to readapt to an oxygen-rich environment, and so the day the Commonwealth Games start is the 18th day, so it's going to be very interesting.
They really need to work on the sales pitch for that, don't they?
Yeah, yeah, they do. Yeah, you don't want to be one day left or right. It's got to be right on the pin.
Another hard part, I guess, to fit in with all this training schedule is that for you automatically qualify for the Com Games team, which means for people that are searching for media talent, you're pretty much it at the moment because the rest of the squad hasn't been announced bar one or two more that have got automatic qualification. How do you have to fit in the media commitments? Does that add on top of the additional pressure that you've already got to compete?
I wouldn't so much say that it adds to pressure, but it certainly adds to the load going in. While the Commonwealth Games is another race, the stage lights are a lot brighter than normal. The media interest is a hell of a lot greater than at any other level aside from the Olympic Games, and it can be very distracting to have to answer so many questions and think outside the processes that you normally would if that load was shared in a group. But you know, the announcement of the team's just being delayed simply because of the road squad having to go through so many more selection races than the track group. But everyone's got a fair idea of who's going and who's not going, and just have to wait to hear it publicly announced before any hands could be shaken or hugs and pats on the back. So
one thing out of that reassuring for you is you've got that automatic slot in there?
Yeah, it is. You know, having put some great performances on the board this year, and I guess having that level of consistency that where the selectors have that in the criteria now, it's really nice to be able to have confidence in the fact that I'll be there.
Part of your training regime is that you have to do squat lifts, and there's some pretty interesting footage of you that's out on the moment that you can see you doing, I think it's about 140 kilos for four repetitions of that. Is that fairly standard, or was that just a bit of fun to see what you could do?
That was, would you believe it, at the end of my rehabilitation period after my accident in Los Angeles before the Beijing Games. And I had 7 months to get fit and healthy again, and we put a huge emphasis on the strength in the gym. And I surpassed my personal best by 20 kilos as a result. And so I thought, I'm going to record this because no one's going to believe me.
There was an interesting quote that somebody said, and we don't know if it's been belonged to you or not, but something about your backside and cracking walnuts. Does that sound true?
No, that's not true. But someone has once said to me that they could rest a coffee on there and it wouldn't fall off. You know, and I used to cop a fair bit at school because I had a butt that stood out a fair bit, but certainly put it to good use. It was a compliment.
Now, your sister, you were just saying a little bit earlier on, your sister's unfortunately retired. Is it going to be hard for you to go to the Com Games and not have her as a part of the team?
Yes and no. That's a decision that Kerry's made, and it's taken her a long time to come to that. She's essentially spent all her life on the bike and chasing a dream and a goal, and she's finally at 27, almost 28, decided that she's spent enough time doing that, and now it's time for her to focus on something else. And so because of that, I feel good and happy for her for having made that decision. I can imagine it would have been very difficult. But at the same time, she's always missed. We had so much fun. We used to room together, travel all around the world. You know, even a lot of the teammates used to make comment that it'd be dead quiet in the hotel, and all you could hear was a pair of giggling gurdies down the end of the corridor because we just amused ourselves. We didn't need any outside entertainment, so, yeah, definitely missed.
For that, it'd be a great pressure release too, I guess, that you get back to the room and have a bit of a laugh and get rid of all the pent-up pressure from the day of competing.
Absolutely, and we knew each other so well that, you know, if we'd had a shocker of a day and a bit cranky and a bit tired, we easily read each other and understood that maybe at the moment it's not a good time to say anything. And the same as when, you know, you come in, you're a bit upset, you've had a bad day, you read the signals and it might just be a simple hug or a hey, how you going, you want to go and have a coffee. But a lot of the time there was a hell of a lot of laughter, lots of jokes, lots of pranks, and you know, it made what can be sometimes a very lonely and tiresome lifestyle of living abroad and out of a suitcase for months on end seemed like it went very quickly.
It's a real solo sport, isn't it? It's only you and the bike out there when you're competing or as you're training like you are now.
Yeah, it is. And it's actually, as much as it is purely individual. It's really nice to have a team environment to train in, and the people who are involved in that team on a daily basis are the people that, really push you on tough days and help you through, like you said, on those lonely days when we're travelling around the world. And yeah, it can be difficult. I mean, look, we're heading away for 2 months, you know, so I won't see my husband for 2 months. That in itself is very difficult to handle. But he's a great guy, and he understands, because he's a cyclist himself, and he understands what it takes to try and be the best, and I'm very lucky to have someone who's so supportive.
Not only are you known for the great things that you do on the track, but unfortunately about 2 years ago, one of the great things that took you off the track has become quite memorable. Broken vertebrae, dislocated shoulder. How hard was it to get back on the bike after you had such a horrific crash?
Initially, not that hard. The eagerness and the anticipation that I held within my stomach and in my mind was so much that I just could not wait to get back on the bike. And once I did eventually get back on the bike or on the velodrome, you know, it was then that I realised that I had to face a fair few fears. And I guess a little bit of panic set in. But again, I had a lot of support from my coach at the time, which was Martin Barras, and my husband Mark, and dealt with those fears really quickly. And I guess the best way to put it is you don't really realise what you love and how much you love it until the prospect of it being taken from you happens. And as much as a lot of people can't understand why I wanted to get back on the bike, the pure and simple answer is that there was nothing else that I wanted to do. And that kind of reinforces your whole approach to what you do and how hard you want to work. And if you love what you do and you have a passion for it, you're prepared to put in the hard yards. And so that's why I really busted my ass in those 7 months, simply because I loved what I did and I wanted the chance to get to Beijing and wear the colours of Australia and try to bring home another medal.
Is that the pinnacle for you, doing the Commonwealth and the Olympic Games representation, or is it something different like the World Championships?
Yeah, look, we're fortunate in our sport, even though it's not really a high-profile thing in Australia, to have a number of different competitions around the world at different times of the year. And the Olympic Games and the Commonwealth Games are definitely the pinnacle for us in terms of our Australian public and the following that we can get through those periods and to get our sport out there. The World Championships, which we have on a yearly basis, unfortunately, doesn't get as much coverage as the Commonwealth Games and the Olympic Games. And, you know, we could have... Well, I remember, where were we? We were coming home from the World Titles, I think it was, this year in Denmark, and I'd won 2 World Titles. The whole team came back to Australia and we were on the same plane as the South Australian soccer team. And there was a throng of media when we all come out of customs, and not a single cyclist was noticed. It was all there for the soccer. So, you know, sometimes that can be a bit of a struggle, especially when you're trying to put your name out there and gain sponsors and get some recognition. But that's the chance we get at the Commonwealth Games and the Olympic Games.
Is it a good thing, and I guess this goes hand in hand with unfortunately not getting the recognition from the squad, but does that then pay off on the other side of it, that you can wander down the street and not be hassled by people to get your autograph or those sorts of things? You've still got that little bit of privacy left.
Yeah, that's definitely a good thing. But I remember I was talking to Justin Langer, the Australian cricketer, and he once told me a story about how he was just bombarded with people wanting autographs and was very tired. And he sat there and he signed every single one of them, because his grandmother said to him once, "One day no one will ask for an autograph. So you gotta take it while it's there and enjoy the moment." And certainly remember that very clearly.
It's a very physical sport. It's got to take a toll on the body. How long do you think the moment's going to continue to last for you?
Fortunately for us in our sport, it's very low impact, aside from when you might have the odd tumble. But seriously, I've been in the sport 16 years. I've probably hit the deck about 3 or 4 times, one of those being quite a major accident. But low impact in terms of the knees, ankles, the lower back. And it's a sport where if you keep your mind in check, you can actually prolong your involvement until your late 30s. And the lady, Lauriane Munzer, who won the gold medal in the sprint in Athens in 2004, was 38 at the age that she won. Shane Kelly, 35, 36 in Beijing. So So Chris Hoy is looking at being 36 come the London Olympics. So it's not a sport that's extremely limited by age. However, age certainly helps in terms of the development and the structure of the body and the time spent in the training effect, getting stronger over the years, lifting weights, pushing the pedals. So essentially, if you can hack it out, you seem to get better with age.
Is it something you think that you'll be doing in 10 years' time, or is that yet to be written?
Well, look, 10 years' time, I think that's a little too far to look. and seriously, I think even 2 years is a little too far to look. I'm looking towards London, and then I'll have a break after that. Because it's very easy to make decisions when you're so emotionally involved in the environment that you're in. And sometimes it can trick you into making the wrong decision. And you need to just walk away and decide what you're feeling and what you want to do. And I did that after Beijing, took 4 months off, went home, enjoyed a bit of family life, which I don't normally get to do. And the desire to get back on the bike and race was simply too strong. So I decided that I'd come back.
Was it a bit painful, the first training session after 4 months break?
I'll tell you what, I swear my seat was brand new. I've had the same seat for 8 years, so it's nice and worn in. By the time we got back after 4 months, my God, so much pain.